Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, a very warm welcome to Dr. Eamon. Dr. Eamon, how are you today, Eamon?
Dear, I'm great indeed, Carol. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Lovely to talk to you. Listen, general medical queries today, and lots of them coming in already. Now, this first question actually came in by letter, a handwritten letter from a lady. Now, I'm not 100% sure what she's asking, but as always, Eamon, I know you and I know that you will know exactly what she's asking. She says, will you ask the doctor about hematology? I'm a woman in my 70s and I can get very tired. When I get my appointment in the clinic soon, will I be able to get some medication to help me? Now, I wonder, has she got the wrong term there? She says hematology, but I wonder, does she mean something else?
Okay, if I could unpack that a small bit, hematology is the section or the specialty of medicine that looks at blood disorders. So a hematologist or consultant hematologist is somebody who is concerned with blood disorders. I suspect what she's referring to there is that she's using it as a verb rather than a noun. What means about that is that she's going to a hematology clinic. She'll be attending a clinic where there will be a hematologist present. Now, reading between the lines, I rather suspect that the reason that she's been sent to the hematology clinic is because she has some form of blood disorder. Anything I'd say after this would be pure speculation on my part, so I just need to be careful about that. But it could be that she has an underlying blood disorder, and if there is one, then the best person for her to see to get it sorted out would be the hematologist, and that's what she's going to the clinic for. Will they be able to help her? It depends on what her problem is, and hopefully that they will be able to find something to help her.
Yeah, there's always a solution and there's always help available.
Indeed.
We wish her all the very best. Now, we've a lady in her early 60s who got a pacemaker 4 years ago. She says every now and then, it might be twice a week or every second or third week, she will feel a squeeze in her chest.
Only if you're at the clinic, what they can do is they can put a sensor over the pacemaker and it'll download the data from the pacemaker. And if there's something that's happening in the pacemaker, then they'll be able to tell you straight away whether it is the case or not. What does a pacemaker do? It does what it says in the tin. It regulates the rate or the pace of the heart. To be aware, though, that that's looking after the electrical system of the heart. It doesn't do anything for the underlying circulation of the heart itself. So what I suggest doing is have a chat with your own GP. The other person you could contact is the cardiology nurse, wherever it was that you had the pacemaker inserted or done or wherever you had the job carried out. Contact they'll almost certainly be a clinical or specialist there. If you give them a ring, they'll probably arrange for you to come in to have the pacemaker, and the word that's used is interrogated. The pacemaker will be, the data will be analysed. And if there's a problem with the pacemaker, if there's something going on, they can tell you straight away. But otherwise, it might be worthwhile having yourself checked out anyway, just in case there's any other problems with the heart.
Yeah, do many people have pacemakers, Eamon?
Quick answer is I don't know. Anecdotally, my feeling would be probably 1 in 200 or so. It's not common, but it's absolutely definitely not uncommon. Certainly the youngest I know is I have a guy you know who's well into his 50s at this stage, and he's had a pacemaker since he was like in his early 20s. But for most people, it tends to be something that you get as you get older. And the older the person is, more likely they are to have a pacemaker. Again, pacemakers are not madly common, but they're not uncommon either.
Now, we have a caller who says their sugar level, it's a she, her sugar levels were 50 and 56 in recent blood tests.
Oh, yeah.
She's on 5 milligrams of linagliptin, if I'm saying it right.
That's right, yeah.
She's wondering, can she get this down by exercise or should she go on the injection?
Right, okay. So there's a couple of things going on there. The 50 and the 56, excuse me, the 50 and the 56 refer to a particular test called the hemoglobin A1C, also known as glycosylated hemoglobin. So what that's about is it's a measure of the amount of the hemoglobin, which is the molecule that carries oxygen around our body. How much of that also has a glucose molecule attached to it? And the thing about it is it gives us a measure over a 2 to 3 month period about how much glucose there has been in the person's bloodstream on average. Now, as most people are aware, somebody who has diabetes, they have extra or excess levels of glucose in their bloodstream. And with this HbA1c test, if the figure is 42 or less, that's considered to be normal. If it's between 42 and 48, the person is considered to have what's called an impaired glucose tolerance. That is to say, they're having a bit of difficulty managing the amount of sugar they have and they need to be careful about diet and so on. And if it's over 48, that's the point at which we would diagnose a diabetes. So our listener has diabetes and she has reasonably well-controlled diabetes. Now, there has been some debate. At one stage, it was considered if a diabetic had their HbA1c levels less than 58, that was considered good control. Now, I think they're moving it down to 53. there are a number of treatment options available. Linagliptin, the one she's talking about, is a very starting point and is a very mild tablet. There are other medications. The injection that she's talking about, so the various injections which have now more recently been used as a means of controlling weight are the medications that previously would have been used for diabetes, or dulaglutide and semaglutide and things like that. They would still probably not considered first-line treatment for diabetes unless the person also had a significant or serious weight problem. There are other medications. There's a group of drugs called the SGLT2s. I'm running that out because don't worry about the name too much, but these are a tablet that are proven to be very effective at not only just controlling diabetes, but oftentimes are used first-line as a treatment for diabetes, but have also been shown to have benefit in terms of heart disease and kidney disease. So it's probably that you'd go through that class of medication before you get onto the injection, unless, as I said, it was the case that you were very, very much overweight.
Now, we'll move on to another question. This is from a lady in her mid-80s. She has a very painful index finger and middle finger and is wondering, can you suggest anything?
Yeah, and I wonder if the finger is, and if this is a rhetorical question because we can't answer this one, but to put it out there, if the fingers are red, hot and exquisitely tender, the likelihood is that our poor listener has a gout. One way or the other, I'd recommend that she talk to her own GP about that.
Listener says, Eamon, what is normally red when you do a blood test? Does it show iron levels? My 90-year-old dad has very low iron levels and is very tired and weak. He has been told that he will need an iron infusion. Where can this be done?
It's done in the hospital, either the general or the bonds. There are facilities there to do iron infusions. Part of the difficulty is that as we get older, we kind of increasing difficulty absorbing iron. Now, if I actually roll back a bit further, the question was, do they check iron? Iron will be checked if it's asked for. I think it's important for people to realise that there are many hundreds of tests we can order for any individual, but we don't do every test for everybody for a whole lot of practical reasons. It's important that any tests that are done for a person are specific to that person, to that person's gender, at that particular stage in their lives, and it will depend on where they are in different tests that are done at different stages. But it does sound as if the iron levels are being checked. If the iron levels are low, one of the problems, and particularly for an older person, is iron is desperately constipating, and if you give some iron tablets, it may well bind them up completely, and that'll lead to all sorts of other problems. One of the ways of bringing up the iron levels in the body is by giving the iron infusion. Now, the reason I'm saying it's being done in hospital is because rarely, and it is very rarely, people can get quite a severe reaction to the iron, and it has to be done in hospital so the person can be monitored while they're having the infusion of the iron. But that's one way of bringing up the iron, and that oftentimes is very good and very helpful at giving a person a lift in terms of their energy.
Now, a texter, I'm not quite sure what the question is here. It's another one of those ones, Eamon, but it's from a man in his 70s who is diabetic and has an overactive bladder. Now, there's no actual question, but I presume he's wondering, he's looking for advice about that.
Yeah. Okay, there can be a bit of a catch-22 there. Unfortunately, as we get older, various organs can start to act up, and one of them it would be the bladder. Now, the thing is that if you have the overactive bladder, there are medications that can relieve the symptoms of the overactive bladder. And of course, for men, of course, there's the additional complication that there may be an issue with the prostate gland as well as the bladder. There are medications that can relieve the symptoms, but like all medications, they carry with them the potential to cause side effects. One of the difficulty with diabetes, and particularly if there's a poorly controlled diabetes, is that you'll be passing more urine as a consequence. Unfortunately, it's also the case that if you're taking medications for diabetes, some of them can cause you to pass more urine as well. So if you've got a problem with control of your bladder because of bladder problems, and if you then cause the person to produce more urine, that can be very troublesome, because then the person, unfortunately, will have difficulty and they may actually run into a problem with continence. So these are all factors that would have to be taken into consideration by your own GP when they're prescribing medication for you.
Very good. Okay, Eamon, I think it might be time to take a break. There's more questions coming in. And
on the way up. Great.
Just want to remind listeners, you can also phone it through if you prefer. You don't want to text. You can phone the question through to Brenda, who's taking the calls today. The number there, 06671E.
Celebrating 200 years of the Bonsecour mission.
Now, Eamon, our next question is from a middle-aged man. He has had an upset tummy for the last 2 weeks, gurgling noises and lots of wind in his tummy. He tried Bloties from the chemist as well as Buscopan. None of them are working. Any suggestions?
Yeah, probably going to need to get himself checked out. So I tell you what the problem here is that what I'd be worried about here, there are two possibilities. One is that he has an inflammatory bowel disorder, so God forbid, nuts of colitis or Crohn's disease, or that he's got irritable bowel syndrome. Also, depending on the age and depending if it's a person, let's say, middle years onwards, you'll also have to worry about something more sinister going on with the bowel. One way or the other, I'd strongly recommend that he make an appointment to talk to his own GP to get this checked out.
Okay. We have a 35-year-old lady who hasn't got a period since 2024. She says, I'm very tired and I get hot when it's cold. What should I do?
Right. Okay, so there's a couple of possibilities there. I suppose one of those facts of life that if a woman is, if her things aren't working properly for her. Now, I've got to be very careful about what I say here. This could be an underlying physical disorder. It could be that there's an underlying, for example, problem with hormones or something like that. And I'm thinking specifically about things like thyroid glands. But it can also happen that if the woman is under emotional stress, and I've certainly seen a number of women who unfortunately have been in abusive relationships and the periods disappear completely for years. So that can happen as well. Now, there are other common situations. Long story short, in and of itself, the fact that our listener hasn't had the periods is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's what's the underlying cause? What else is going on? Why have the periods stopped for this period of time? And I would strongly recommend that you should be talking to your own GP about this.
Who'll maybe refer her to a gynecologist.
Well, there'll be a preliminary blood test that the GP will be able to do for you anyway. And the GP may well be able to find out what the problem is, if it's something that's reasonably remediable. If it isn't sorted out, then she may well need to be referred onwards.
Next up, 70-year-old woman who says she's very confused. She's been diagnosed with diverticulitis. On a normal daily basis, what should my diet look like? White or brown bread? I find it very confusing.
Okay, quick answer is I can't give you the answer, in the sense that this is an area that I would refer to our nutrition and dietetics colleagues. And at age 72, the thing is that you will have access to the public nutrition and dietetic services, which are being developed all the time. With diverticular disease, one of the problems is, ironically, it's due to a lack of roughage in the diet, and that's over our lifetime. Part of the answer is actually to increase roughage in the diet, but to increase it very, very slowly. And what I mean to say by that is that if somebody starts going on a high roughage diet straight off the bat, and especially if they don't take enough fluids, that actually can make the diverticular disease worse. So it's about a gradual increase in the amount of roughage in the diet. So it may be that at the start you're on white bread and that you switch to brown bread, but it's way more than just white versus brown bread, because obviously there are many, many other sources of roughage in our diet.
Yeah.
A nutritionist or a dietitian can advise you about that.
Yeah, I think she was looking for a cut and dried answer, and there's no such thing really.
No such thing, not for this one, no.
A man in his 50s says his pulse is only 49 beats per minute. He got his heart shocked last October and all is good. But he's wondering, is that a low pulse?
You see, I suspect myself, okay, the heart shock bit of it means that he almost certainly had a thing called a cardioversion, which is a procedure that's carried out for people who have the irregular heartbeat condition called atrial fibrillation. Now, the thing about it is that if you have atrial fibrillation, you almost certainly would be on a group of drugs called the beta blockers, whose job it is to slow your heart rate down. If your normal heart rate was in around the 70 or something like that, and your heart rate suddenly dropped down into the 40s, you would probably not feel the better for it. On the other hand, if your heart rate has been slowed down gradually because of the medication, and you're actually doing okay in yourself, then the heart rate of 40 or of 49 is actually perfectly okay.
Okay, well, that answers that. A lady in her mid-50s is asking about swollen feet and ankles that are very painful at times. What can she do for that?
Okay, again, it's where is the underlying cause? What is the issue? Why does our listener have the swollen legs in the first place? So the answer to that is she needs to talk to her own GP. Try to work out what's the underlying issue, what's causing her ankles to be swollen. The difficulty is there could be a range of conditions. Sort of, it can happen because of circulation problems. More usually, though, it indicates that there may be an issue either with the heart or the kidneys. Anyway, one way or the other, it does need to be checked out.
Now, a caller doesn't leave her age, but she says she has polymyalgia and is wondering what medication can she take for that?
Yeah. Polymyalgia is in a spectrum of disorders of various polymyalgia, irritable bowel, chronic fatigue. These are all kind of all in the same spectrum of conditions. It's not that there's a single specific medication that'll work for this. In most cases, what you do is you're looking at what are the specific symptoms. There are some medications that can be of use, but the difficulty here, and I've got to be really careful again, there's no such thing as any good painkiller. What I mean to say by that is that every single medication we can use to try and help relieve discomfort and pain will and does carry with it side effects, and some of the side effects are quite significant. Your own GP will probably be able to have a chat with you about it. There are, for example, medications like amitriptyline, which before people say, I'm not depressed. Yes, amitriptyline a long, 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 long time ago was used as a treatment for depression, but in tiny doses today, much, much lower than the dose that would be used for the treatment of depression, can be sometimes very effective at relieving the symptoms of fibromyalgia. But there are other medications, the group of drugs called the gabapentinoids. Now, that's a group of drugs, and they, for a handful of people, can be really good. For more people, can cause quite significant, quite serious side effects, and also are highly addictive. So it's a conversation you need to have face-to-face with somebody to work out what is best for you.
A caller has a pain down their right leg behind the knee. What can she do about it?
Yeah. So if the pain is starting from, say, up around the buttock, going down the outside of the leg or on the back of the knee, the likelihood is that it may well be a disc problem of some sort. If the problem is behind the back of the knee itself, it may very well be that she has a condition called a Baker's cyst, which can cause discomfort there, or maybe that she's torn some muscles, she could have torn her hamstrings and so on. Somebody needs to examine her. Either a GP or a physio in the first instance, but somebody needs to talk to an examiner to see what's going on.
45-year-old male listener Eamon has a ganglion cyst on his left elbow, which is painful at times. He's wondering, should he get it removed?
If it's painful, yes. Not trying to be smart or facetious, but the thing about it is that ganglions are quite benign. So what's a ganglion? It's a cyst. It's a collection of fluid, and in and of themselves, they're actually quite harmless, unless they're causing pain. And most of the time, the pain is due to pressure. So the best thing to do is, talk to a surgeon with a view to getting that removed, and that'll relieve your symptoms for you.
Now, we have a 59-year-old female. She's post-sepsis, which she had in April. She was in hospital also in March with a lung infection, and at that time was tested for diabetes, which came back negative. But she had her bloods done last week, and they came back that she has diabetes.
Yeah.
She says, my question is, does it have anything to do with getting sepsis?
Yeah. The honest answer is I don't know, but the fact that her system is so challenged Okay, sepsis is a technical term for blood poisoning. So what was happening during that episode was that she would have had bacteria in her bloodstream, which literally touch on every organ in the body. Could it have triggered the diabetes? Possibly. It could also be that as a result of the stress in our body because of the diabetes, that may well have had an impact on the functioning of the pancreas, which is the gland that controls her blood sugar levels. One way or the other, she now has this condition where she's got raised blood glucose. The hope for the best would be that it would settle down of its own accord. Otherwise, she will need the appropriate treatment for the diabetes she has.
Now, we were talking about sleep last week, of course, Eamon, and we've a caller who's taking a sleeping tablet at the moment, Zimivone, for the last few years. Takes it early in the evening to relax, and again at night for sleep. And wants to know, is this okay?
Not really. Not really. No, again, being very careful, because this is a person who clearly is having issues and problems, and we don't want to pull everything away from underneath them. Do you know what I mean? We don't want to pull away all their supports. But this is the problem. Beyond probably 2, definitely 3 weeks use, two things happen. One, the medication becomes less effective, and then you have to take more. And two, you develop a physical dependence on the medication. And this is the classic example. The use of drugs like the Zopiclone and another one called Zimvane, which are short, they're really intended for short-term use only. And that's the point I was making last week, that if you have a particular stress in your life for a short period of time, then you use the medications for a short period of time only. But a short period of time is measured in days or a few weeks, but definitely not longer than that, because beyond that, you absolutely definitely run into problems. There's an argument here to be made that the medication is not actually doing anything for you. And the question is, how do you detox? How do you wean yourself off this medication?
Now, we need to be finishing up, Eamon, but I just want to put this one to you that just came in. It's from an 82-year-old who has a very bad pain in the rectal area after going to the toilet. Yeah. It can be excruciating. I don't know whether it's a man or a woman, but the listener is wondering what could it be.
Okay, quick answer is I don't know, but they need to be urgently seen about this. That would always be a red flag. I'd be really anxious to have them seen and get checked out about that.
Okay, and last one, 80-year-old female has a very bad tremor at the moment. She's taking medication for it, but it's not helping. Is there anything else she can do?
Unfortunately, in terms of lifestyle measures and things like that, probably not. You see, the difficulty is what's the underlying cause for the tremor? And it's unusual if it is related to the medication being a cause for it, you would take away the medication. Otherwise, it's a neurological problem of some sort, and I'd be deferring to my consultant neurology colleagues for their advice as to how to best manage this thing.
Okay, listen, we're going to have to let you go, Eamon, but loads of questions that only came in the last few minutes. And just again, to apologise to the listeners, we can't keep Eamon beyond the half an hour. He's a busy man and he's so good to give us his time. So I think the key is to get your questions in as early as you can. Eamon, thanks a million. We'll chat to you again next week. All going well. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Eamon Shanahan there with this week's Medical Matters. As I said, quite a lot of questions have only come in the last few minutes, but I'm so sorry. We have run out of time, but I will try and keep them over for next week. Or if you want to send them in again next week, we'll do our best for you.